This is the Talking Pictures podcast presented by the Film and Photography Society at UCLA. Today we'll be talking about the iconic 80s blockbuster, Back to the Future. But first, a brief introduction of our hosts and their favorite time travel movie.
Hi, my name is Darren, the outreach director for FPS this year. And my favorite time travel movie is probably, surprise, surprise, Back to the Future.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool that we're going to talk about that movie like in this episode. What a nice coincidence.
Yeah, very surprising.
hi, everyone. I'm Andrew Chumle. I'm this year's media director for UCLA's Film and Photography Society. And my favorite time travel movie is really hard, but I'm probably going to have to go with Looper just because I really love the story. I love like the characters a lot. I love the different twists, and I'm a huge fan of Emily Blunt, and she's in the movie, and yeah.
We're here to talk about Back to the Future, a movie that needs no introduction. It's one of the most iconic, most important, the most famous, most entertaining movies of all time. What is your opening line for Back to the Future?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me, Andrew. You know, long-time listener, first-time guest, but I'm just happy to be there. I want to say that up front, you know? But yeah, I was told that we should have sort of like a central argument around which to center our chat, which is why I'm planting my flag firmly on Back to the Future being the most iconic movie of the 80s. You can fight me on that. Or I guess like more personally, why Back to the Future means a lot to me. But you know, really, this is just going to be a platform for me to gush about Back to the Future for half an hour, however long this is. So that's what this really is. But yeah, it's infinitely rewatchable. All the humor and everything still holds up. I think it introduces the coolest time travel vessel in the history of like ever, better than any phone booth or hot tub. Or I haven't seen Tenet, but I'm sure they don't have a freaking DeLorean. Because the way I see it, if you're gonna build a time machine, why not do it with some style? But what do you think of the movie, Andrew?
I think it's a really entertaining watch, and it definitely it has the feel of a movie that you know will never be forgotten, a movie that'll always be like embedded in the minds of
super like timeless.
Yeah, it's timeless. Yeah, so many of the quotes, the characters, the tropes, the personalities, everything down to the music, everything down to like the look and feel of the film, we still see it to this day. I remember like a friend of mine from elementary, she went to a school where for a Halloween costume contest or Halloween costume sort of gag thing, someone dressed up as Doc Brown, and on the date of 2015, whichever date it was, they went to the future in 2015. The person dressed up as Doc Brown went like ran into each room and had his own little spiel of like, oh, I'm currently stuck in 2015. I'm trying to look for my DeLorean, trying to build a flux capacitor for my DeLorean. So
that's adorable. Yeah,
so the movie's clearly had a pretty firm hold on the minds of not just the youngsters from that era, but the youngsters of today too. Well, you brought up that Back to the Future might be the most iconic movie of the 1980s for you, or not even might for you. It is the most iconic movie of the 1980s.
It is. Well, I preface. I haven't seen a lot of movies from the 80s. Like I only recently watched Terminator.
Oh yeah, that's another great one. Yeah,
it is a great one. Terminator 2 is so good. Anyway, yeah. But actually, Patrick Willems came out with a video recently. I don't know if you saw it. It's like on the most 80s movies ever, and he kind of dismissed Back to the Future because, quote unquote, it's not 80s enough because it mostly takes place in the 50s.
What?
Which I know, right? Can I say, are we live? I don't agree, because sure, it does take place like mostly in the 50s, but it's 80s nostalgia for the 50s, and most of the comedy and the jokes when they're in the past comes from the dramatic irony of characters not knowing what happened in the 80s, like when Doc like laughs about Ronald Reagan being president because he's like the actor, which yeah, it's the only type of joke that can be made like during that time. And there's like so many like that. Do you have a 80s favorite that you think is better than Back to the Future?
In terms of,
or at least more iconic of the decade.
Right. In terms of iconic status, honestly, it's hard to disagree with you just because I feel like, honestly, when I think of 80s, the first movie I think of is Back to the Future. I mean, Ghostbusters, but I still think Back to the Future is more famous, more iconic. Everyone remembers Marty McFly and Doc Brown. Who remembers all four names of the Ghostbusters, yeah. You know? What other movies are there from the 80s that are
I can't even name one.
Yeah, there's Venkman. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah.
Venkman, yeah.
Venkman.
That's all I know. That's all I remember, you know?
Other 80s movies, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what movie that he landed on for, like, which one is the most iconic, but I think it's Back to the Future. I watched it as a kid, kind of. Like, not, like, too young, but, like, when I was, like, 10 or 12. And I just kind of fell in love with it. I feel like it was the first pre-90s movie that I watched, and it kind of made me think, like, oh, movies can be, like, older movies can be good, even though, like, 80s movies, like, not that old comparatively. But, yeah, it was kind of that movie for me as a kid.
Right.
But, yeah, were you going to say something?
Yeah. I do think that although it's probably the most iconic film of the 80s, it doesn't come with its own flaws. But before that, let's talk about all the great things of the movie. Okay. So one thing for sure is...
there are no flaws, Andrew.
Oh, there are flaws. We'll get into that. There are flaws, but it's still fantastic. Okay. Yeah. The screenplay. Tell me a bit about the screenplay, Darren.
Screenplay, yes. Well, you know, it's widely regarded as a perfect film, which I guess, like, on a tangent, I feel like I'm realizing recently that, like, a lot of the time when people say something is perfect, like a film or a TV show, I feel like they mean the ending is perfect. I rewatched Avatar: The Last Airbender recently, and people were just like, "Oh, it's a perfect series," even though I feel like those first two seasons are kind of rough. I mean, you can argue that, like, it was meant to be that way for, like, the journey of the characters, but I mean, like, I think what's really, like, strong about that show is how well they executed the ending, like that last season, and then those last four episodes were just done so well. And I feel like with Back to the Future, that third act has, like, so much tension and, like, all the culmination of, like, the whole story. But yeah, that kind of has nothing to do with that, but say next. But in terms of Back to the Future being a perfect film, there's almost not a wasted line. I feel like in the first 10 minutes, there's so many lines that get set up that come back around in some form later in the movie. Just super clever circular writing.
I think the screenplay is also just so witty. I think that so there are so many lines in there that are clearly memorable and unforgettable for people because there's so much, the writing is so colorful. There's so much pizzazz. Each character has something to say that's so that character, you know? Like, every word that comes out of Doc Brown's mouth is so Doc Brown. Such a Doc Brown thing to say. I think when a screenplay is able to highlight its characters in that way, and considering that the movie knows what it's supposed to be, and that is, like, a very fun, very entertaining popcorn blockbuster, it fulfills its role, and it, like, accomplishes its mission so well with its writing.
Yeah, it's so quotable. With movies like this, when you go back to them and you see, like, how, like, almost every line has become, like, a quote in pop culture, I wonder if, were these, like, sayings that, like, already existed, or, like, were, like, these just made up for the movie? Like, "Great Scott," huge, and what does Marty say? "This is heavy, Doc." It's, like, just that, get those, like, catchphrases that, like, have caught on past the life of the film.
Transitioning from the great writing, you mentioned Marty being like, "That's heavy, Doc," and Doc Brown, you know, being Doc Brown. It sort of also reminds, another reason why the movie is so great is the, like, perfect performances. So what are your thoughts on the work of the great Michael J. Fox and also the great Christopher Lloyd?
I love Michael J. Fox. I think there's a reason that Marty McFly has become so iconic, that your Steve Harrington's and your Tom Holland Spider-Man's are still trying to capture the charm of that performance 30, 40 years later. It's all Michael J. Fox. He's so charismatic, and his comedic timing is so on point, and the delivery of, like, every line, it's just, like, dripping in personality and character. And Christopher Lloyd, I think he brings so much to that role, elevating it beyond, like, the kooky mad scientist role, while also being, like, the quintessential kooky mad scientist. He's got, like, so many, like, funny, like, weird looks in the camera and like, little mannerisms, and it feels so, like, dynamic. I feel like with a character like that, you can fall into it being sort of one note and him just being, like, high strung all the time, but, like, his more calm moments hit so hard too.
Yeah. As I was saying before about how the screenplay knew exactly what it was trying to be with the movie and what it was trying to do and setting out what it was trying to do, I feel like the performances are also extremely self-aware and they know what movie they're in, and they and the actors play so well, you know, in their roles, considering the genre of film and the tone of the movie too. Like, what makes the quote so memorable, and what makes the movie so what makes the movie and its scenes so memorable is also just how quirky and how there's so much bravado in the performances of Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd. Everything down to the delivery of certain lines is just unforgettable. When Michael J. Fox is like, "So, Doc, you're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?" Yeah, it's catchy. It's catchy and it's infectious and it's
the rhythm of like the delivery is almost like tailor made for like just to be memorable at, and it's crazy.
And it feels organic. Each performance still feels really organic.
It's crazy too when you think about like the fact that Michael J. Fox wasn't like originally gonna be in the movie. They had already cast another actor because Michael J. Fox couldn't make it due to him being in Family Ties, the other show he was in at the time. And they cast another actor, I think his name is Eric Stoltz, and they shot like a good portion of the movie and already with him in it, and then they looked back at it and it was like he was just not funny enough, or not, he didn't have what Michael J. Fox had. So they like spent however like millions of dollars to reshoot with him in it, which I think is like so interesting, because it's like you look at the final performance and it's like Michael J. Fox is Marty McFly, and yeah, the character and the actor have like almost become inseparable in my mind. There's like a bunch of YouTube videos on it, and it's like really, really interesting to look into. But on another note about performances, I feel like this movie is one where every supporting character and every even like the bit parts and the extras that have lines all feel like characters and have like their own like funny lines that they say, or like they have moments in the film. Like I'm thinking of like the dude in the diner who eventually becomes mayor. He has this line that like I think about all the time, where he's like, mayor. Elijah Wood's character in that diner where he's like the kid in the diner, and also just like little moments like that with like side characters that like really make it feel a world and make it feel like a living, breathing piece of material.
Oh yeah, it's like every nook and cranny of the film was polished to perfection, including, like you said, the side characters. I also wanted to mention the production design and the costume design and the cinematography. Everything is just so seamless. It's all colorful, and I love colors. I love colors. The time travel scene. And again, the costumes are also iconic too. Like every kid who's seen Back to the Future will dress up as Doc Brown or Marty McFly at one point.
Yes, I literally dressed up as Doc Brown or Marty McFly from
there. You go.
Like last year, it's true. I think that that costume is so iconic. I feel like Marty was like the teen dude of like the 80s, and even like after that, because like there's no kid who saw that movie and didn't want to be Marty McFly. He was like, he played the guitar. He had like a hot girlfriend. He was like the guy.
Great skateboarder too, right?
Like he rides a skateboard. He's just that guy.
He's him.
And I think the costume has like that. He is him. The costume is like a big part of that, because like it just makes him stand out as like the main character. And I feel like
when the movie goes back to the 50s, I remember it captures the, well, I mean, not like it lived in the 50s, I don't know what it looked like back in the 50s, but it definitely captured and pointed out and underscored that this is a different era, and it's an example of the production design playing well into the storytelling as well. There was a unified vision here, and we saw it through the acting, the writing, and production design, the camera work, the costumes, the music, which, by the way, the music, Darren, what do you think of the soundtrack?
Yes. Well, okay, before we talk about music, because you brought up the scene when he first walks into Town Square and Mr. Sandman plays, and I love that song. But I did want to talk about one little thing from the screenplay, which I feel like Marty McFly, I feel like he gets flack as a character for like not, he everyone says like, oh, he doesn't change, he's like the same thing in all the movies. I feel like you could levy that complaint against the two after, like, the second and third movie, because Marty does kind of, like, stagnate as a character in those movies. But I don't agree. I think he does change. He goes from sort of resenting his family and not really connecting this family to eventually, by the end of the film, seeing them in a new light and having a better understanding of his parents and being able to relate to them, which I think is, like, a really wholesome premise of, like, this kid who has to save his family, or, like, it inadvertently, like, gets sent back to the future or back to the past and inadvertently ends up saving his family, which I think is really cute. I also kind of feel like good movies don't really need terribly complex character arcs to be good. There's probably, like, a bunch of examples of, like, movies that are good without, like, having some, like, big character development moment happen.
A great character arc is really important. Some of the greatest pieces of film and TV that we've seen, I'm sure, all incorporate incredible arcs.
And I'm saying this as somebody who prefers character-driven movies and TV shows. But, yeah, it doesn't take away from this movie for me.
Because, to me, a great movie can also be a character who already has strong qualities and they change the world with those strong qualities. So they don't change, but their world changes. And that is equally redeeming and satisfying to watch.
Also, I have a couple of notes here to round off our talk about the script. Just some of my favorite iconic lines from the movie. We've talked about Great Scott, this heavy doc. I'm your density. It's really funny. Something I saw quote that Biff says, he says, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here, which also very funny. Ted Lasso, or I think it was the second season, either first or second season, they quote the first Back to the Future when they're talking about Ronald Reagan or something like that, where Beard says, Ronald Reagan, the actor, which brings me joy. And also, to end this off, my favorite underrated line from this movie, you caused $300 damage to my car, you son of a bitch, and I'm gonna take it out of your ass. So that's Back to the Future for you. But yes, the soundtrack. We should talk about the soundtrack and also the score, because the score is so iconic. It's probably one of my favorite film scores ever. That little jingle of descending triplets, but it's the doo-doo-doo-doo. It's pure nostalgia every time I hear it. Alan Silvestri, the composer, I feel like he's kind of underappreciated.
Oh yeah,
I don't think
he is underappreciated.
Yeah, I never hear his name.
No one talks about his work here or in Forrest Gump enough. He and Robert Zemeckis are collaborators for sure.
Zemeckis movies, yeah. Polar Express too has like a really beautiful main theme, but I never hear his name mentioned in like when discussions of great composers. He'll like forever be goated to me for Back to the Future, of course, but also he scored some of the most like memorable and impactful theater moments for me with Infinity War and Endgame, and I feel like his work there is like some of the best in the MCU. But the main theme, so iconic, dun, 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 dun. It's just that score will like be in my mind forever. There's a funny YouTube video of this guy who, it was like in the early 2000s maybe, who he would take like movie scores and put lyrics to them in like the theme of the movie. So like the Back to the Future theme was like, oh, Great Scott, and that I don't know why I mentioned that, but it's just like part of why the score is ingrained in my mind. But yeah, there's so many, apart from like the originally composed music, there's so many great needle drops and fun music and that's like a part of the DNA of the movie. Marty hanging on the back of a Jeep with Huey Lewis and the news in the background will always have me bobbing my head in bobbing my head along. It's such a great opening of the movie. And you mentioned the scene where Marty walks into 1950s Times Square for the first time. To this day, I still associate Mr. Sandman to that scene because it's so iconic.
When I hear it, I know instantly what it is. And also, going back to the idea of iconic 80s, or Back to the Future being the most iconic movie of the 80s, I feel like anytime I think of the 80s, I think of Back to the Future and I think of the theme song. That's how ingrained it is in my mind. And I didn't grow up watching it. None of us did because we were born well after that. And even then, it still manages to have such a lasting impact on us. And I have no doubts it'll continue to have an impact on future generations too. You brought up how whenever you listen to Mr. Sandman, the first thing you think of is Marty walking into the 50s Times Square for the first time. That is just the power of this movie, and the soundtrack and the score gives so much context to the movie, and then you're reminded of how great it is, how important it is. You're reminded of all the great scenes that you enjoyed, all the great moments, and that's what this movie does so well. That's why it's so beloved.
Some other like great musical moments. Earth Angel plays like during the dance at the end. It's such a sweet 50s like romantic tune. Of course, Power of Love, it's iconic.
I also love the Johnny B. Goode scene.
It's a great scene. It like totally goes in line with like Marty's journey.
Everything in this movie comes full circle, even the guitar aspect of it. He gets a chance to demonstrate his bravado and his talent on a stage where they're more accepting of that kind of music back then.
Bringing up that song reminds me of when Eli mentioned that, was it both Forrest Gump and Marty McFly have scenes of like a white character like stealing something from a black character and making it their own, right? A black person from history for both Forrest Gump and Marty McFly's case, which I don't personally know how to feel about. Enough said. I think I'm going through my notes. I think that's everything I want to talk about.
We can continue talking about how great this movie is, but it can't be excused of certain flaws. Or things that are aspects that are questionable about the movie. And the first thing is, and this one is a kind of a small one. I only have two things, really. That's how good this movie is. If you think about the time travel for long enough, it will start to not make sense. But I can't hold it against Back to the Future exclusively because that's the deal with all time travel movies. Time travel itself is a paradox. And the longer you think about it, the more you realize
that's true.
It's impossible.
I think with any like time travel movie, I like tend to dissociate that aspect of the film because like I already know that's like either I'm not supposed to understand it or like it's less fun if I do.
If you just look at the surface level events without considering any of the science beneath the film or pseudoscience for some people, then it's what Back to the Future does pretty darn well is, and this is what should be expected of most time travel movies, is establishing rules and following those rules. Spoilers for anyone who still hasn't seen Endgame. The ending of Endgame breaks its own rule of time travel. Steve Rogers deflates its own perspective and viewpoint on what time travel is. Which, by the way, the movie was taking a shit on Back to the Future for its interpretation of time travel.
Back to the Future was a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. Then Endgame breaks its own rules, so there's that. So I guess what I originally was going to talk about as a flaw ended up being a strength for Back to the Future, really. So that's
okay.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. We'll take that.
Well, yeah. But the final thing, which is something that I think can get on people's nerves or make people feel a little uneasy, is the fact that Marty McFly and his mother almost had because he wouldn't have let that happen. It would be so weird. But
they kissed.
They did kiss.
They do kiss in the movie.
They did kiss, and it was weird. But, and I will turn this into a strength again. The movie does a really good job of handling it in a way that's more silly than it is creepy and extremely inappropriate and perverted and just wrong. Like, it's supposed to feel wrong, obviously, right? That's why, you know, you're like, oh yeah, Marty, this cannot happen. It is not part of the plan, right? But it's not like, I don't cringe. I'm more just like, oh God. You know, it's like that.
At the stake of sounding like a weirdo, I feel like the way that they approach it with like, it's painted as being wrong and uncomfortable in the movie, which makes me feel like, I don't know, when I watch those scenes, it's like, oh God, but it's kind of fun. Like, I don't understand why this had to be in the movie, but it's like, I feel like the fact that they were willing to go there is kind of funny to me. And when you like learn about like how Disney and like a bunch of other studios did not want to make this movie, it's just kind of funny that they chose to do that.
I think they were taking a creative risk. They knew like most people watching that movie would be on the younger side, and so they wouldn't think too deeply into that, like, oh, what are the implications of that? They would just be like, ew, like Marty kisses mommy. It's like that level of maturity, you know? So that's why it can definitely be overlooked. But, you know, for adults that watch the movie, they'll be like, this is nuts, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the major flaws that I can think of, really, when I watch the movie. That's like, that's what I think about. But oh man, this movie is a classic. For anyone that hasn't seen it, go watch it. Like, come on now, let's do it.
Yeah, I end up rewatching it at least like a couple of times a year it's like a comfort movie for me,
right?
And really happy to be able to talk about it today. Some other fun stuff like Back to the Future related, I know the musical adaptation, the stage adaptation, I think they might be touring LA like right now as this being recorded, or at least like maybe this week, which I'm honestly really sad that I should have bought tickets. Go watch it if they're still here. If not, I think they might be touring elsewhere. But yeah, from everything I'm hearing, it seems like just a really fun adaptation of the film. And the music I've heard is really, really cool. I know they like pay homage to all the songs in the movie. Yeah, just thought I'd throw that out there. If you don't know, there's a Back to the Future musical. You do now.
Darren, what are your closing remarks on Back to the Future?
Yeah, if you made it this far and you haven't seen the movie, I question you a little bit. But if you have, you totally should. We spoiled it a bunch probably, but I don't think that takes away from the movie. I think you're still going to love it. So my call to action to you, listener, is go watch the movie. It's fun. You're going to have a blast if you like sci-fi. If you don't like sci-fi, there's still plenty of love. It's great. I feel like I'm promoting the movie now, even though I have like no stakes in monetary gain by doing so. But if you do, that means you can come talk to me and we can talk about the movie and how much it rules. But yeah, thank you, Andrew, for this conversation. I had so much fun. You gave me an excuse to rewatch the movie again, which is always, why not? But yeah.
Yo, Darren, thank you so much for hopping onto the podcast. Thank you for recommending this movie because that just made my life a lot more fun, you know, getting to talk about Back to the Future.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, thank you for your insights. Yeah, I know. It was really interesting to hear.
I was your first choice of e-board member to come on and not the seventh or however many there already have been.
It's not seventh. It's not seventh. I'm kidding. it's somewhere between one and seven, and it's not seven.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a start. Makes you feel better. That's a start, yeah.
That's a start, yeah, yeah. but you know what, we're here now and it was fun. So thank you, Andrew.
Yes, thank you, Darren. Thank you to Darren for recommending this movie and for appearing on the podcast to discuss the brilliance of the iconic film Back to the Future. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Thank you for listening. Now go enjoy Back to the Future.